and welcome to Super Podcast, episode 64. I am your host, Super Marcy, and with me, as always, is Bede. Oh, wait, Bede's not here. The sisters kidnapped him yet again. He might have to be saved by Morgan Freeman.
Marcy, I told you, I'm not Bede. I can never be Bede. He is too awful. He is too terrible. I can't fill those shoes. What more do you want?
Well, to segue, with Bede not being here, we have AJ to take his place. But
that's me.
Yeah, but in the way that AJ is not terrible. He's awesome AJ.
I like that. I like the ring of that. I'm the awesome American AJ. I like that. Yes.
Awesome American AJ. So welcome back to the Super Podcast, AJ.
In America.
In America. Oh, gosh.
Glad to be back, as always.
I should hope so. Well, thanks for being the honorary co-host. I'm sure Bede will be crying right about now.
I know. I shall try and take on the role of acting Bede as diligently as possible.
Awesome. And we have a very special guest for the show. Oh. we have a first time guest, and I think this might be his first podcast. Mm-hmm. So please welcome Joe. Is it McGinnis?
Yeah, like the drink.
Yay, Joe McGinnis, just like the drink from timmedgoods.com. Welcome.
Hi, good to be here.
I should hope so. And we've got quite a mix because you've got an Aussie, an American, and a British person.
A Scouser.
I was going to say a POM, but that's kind of not nice.
Oh, I don't know what that means, so you can call me.
I think it's the really bad slang term for somebody from over there that the Australians call you.
Over there.
Over there, yes. Because you're nowhere near me right now.
Yes.
All different countries, all different time zones, and we somehow managed to get together to bring our listeners an awesome podcast. So our topic for the show, something we haven't really talked about too much on the podcast as far as just having it as the main topic. So we're going to be talking about sci-fi in like film and television. So hooray for sci-fi.
Hooray.
Huzzah.
I said hip hip huzzah.
Hip hip huzzah. we've got like some picks to go through. So the first lot of picks that we'll be talking about, we're going to talk about like film or TV series that first got us interested in sci-fi. And because AJ is the honorary co-host, I'm going to pick on him so he can give us, like, a pick for what got him interested in sci-fi.
Okay, when you sent the notes over about the show topic, I went into the annals of my viewing history, tried to think back, okay, what was the first sci-fi movie that really made an impression on me? And I sort of came to the realization that I enjoy sci-fi, but I'm not so much a fan of it. Like, I like it as much as I like mysteries or comedies, but there was nothing that really struck out for me that said, oh my gosh, I love sci-fi. That being said, one of the earliest examples of a movie that did grab my attention on its own merits, mm-hmm, was 2001. You know, just to be cliche, you know, that's one of the most well-regarded sci-fi movies ever, just let alone movies ever. Mm-hmm. But I saw it when I was 14 years old. I was still in middle school, just coming into my own as a movie fan. But when I saw 2001, I totally got it, just right off the bat. And it's a testament to how a story can be told through just mostly images. There's not terribly much dialogue in the movie, but just through like editing and the sort of scenes that he lays out and just that Kubrick laid out and just lets these images play on their own, you get everything that's going on, and just the concepts were really fascinating. And just to see a movie in the sci-fi genre, which a lot of people just kind of sees these throwaway movies like Alien Invasion stuff, just to see it treated so seriously as a piece of art in itself just really struck me.
Mm, I agree, definitely.
I hope so.
Yeah. I'm sorry, AJ, you can't do that. Sorry. Marcy has to throw in, like, a lame joke. But I agree with everything you've said. I really, really, really like the movie. And I also read the book, and I know that they kind of, like, the book was written at the same time the movie was being filmed or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of similar but different. But I think they're both actually really fascinating. And they're definitely, like, really fantastic additions for, like, that genre.
Yeah, even the sequel, 2010, that's a much more straightforward adventure action movie. It's got, I think, Roy Scheider's in it, and Helen Mirren, actually, a very early Helen Mirren. But even for a more straightforward action movie-style sequel to something as abstract as 2001, it was still a pretty good movie.
Yeah, it was. I actually was going to try and rewatch that one. But obviously I haven't as yet, but I really need to. And now that you've brought it up, I think I'm definitely going to have to get on that in the next couple of weeks.
Good.
Yeah. Joe, do you have anything to say about 2001 Space Odyssey?
Well, I know it was from my suggestion we talked about sci-fi, and I know it's one of the most iconic sci-fi films of all time ever made, but controversially, I've never actually seen it.
Wow.
I know. I am like a big sci-fi fan, but I tend to be like this. If I'm into a genre, I tend to almost skip out on the really popular ones. So I feel confident I know most about it from all the parodies I've seen on it. The Fridge and the Simpsons episode at that time.
The Simpsons have parodied that movie a lot.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you give us a peek for, like, what got you interested in sci-fi?
Okay, well, the first peek, I think I'm the exact opposite. I mean, until I was about 14, I was a big sci-fi fan without even realising that I was a big sci-fi fan, because my mum and dad sort of raised me on science fiction. So probably from a very early age. My pick is the TV series Star Trek Next Generation.
Okay.
It's quite obvious again, but it was one of those things where we just watch it all the time in the house, and it was always on. That was the thing that really got me into it, because that was the first one I really was exposed to from a young age.
Yeah, that was actually going to be what I was going to pick.
Okay.
Because from the age of 3, I would watch Star Trek The Next Generation, like, on its first original run on TV. So I remember when it first started and I was 3. And I do remember, like, every week, I think it was on Tuesdays, I would go in front of the TV to watch Star Trek. And this was the thing that really got me into sci-fi, because I was I still am a big nerd or a geek, whatever you'd like to call me. But this really, like, got me interested in it, and from Star Trek I kind of went into watching Star Wars and all that kind of stuff, but it was The Next Generation from that very, very young age that really got me interested in sci-fi. And then I was, like, you know, a bit of a geek for, like, stuff to do with space.
Yeah, same, yeah.
So I was always, like, reading a book about, you know, the planets and stuff or something like that. Really, 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 really nerdy.
Yeah, well, it seems like even though we're on other sides of the planet, so we had almost the exact same childhood.
Yeah.
I was always, like, in the head.
If I may make a startling confession, I have never seen any episode of any Star Trek series ever. I've seen the movies, but none of the shows. I think maybe part of one of the original shows, but I have seen just none of them.
You're missing out, man.
We are opposites, AJ. So far.
Complete opposite.
I'm ashamed.
Yeah, I mean, I have to be honest, Star Trek The Next Generation pretty much, like, helped shape who I am, because that's all I would watch as far as TV went. Like, that was my main, like, obsession. And I would watch it all the time, and I used to have, like, I used to collect Star Trek cards. Yes.
Cards.
I used to collect trading cards. I used to have, like, a little Enterprise. I still have my original Next Generation. It's, like, right on top of, like, my iMac. I have the communicator badge.
Oh,
the original mm-hmm. one. It's from, the date on it says 1988. So there you go.
I had Dick Tracy trading cards.
That counts.
A lot of them.
Yeah, but yeah, long story short, yeah, I mean, I'm with you 100% Star Trek, because that was one of my picks. It definitely got me interested in everything. Like, it probably made me the big nerd that I am. Because I was, yeah, I mean, for me, it was just, like, outer space. And, I mean, the thing about it is it is, like, science fiction. It's set in the future, but they just handled everything so intelligently that it didn't, like, dumb down things for the audience. Like, you'd actually have to think about things.
Yeah.
And there's, like, so many fantastic episodes. And I think they just did a great job with the series, and I'll always, always treasure it. And I have to, I've probably mentioned it before, but I'll mention it again, that meeting Patrick Stewart last year was one of the best moments ever.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
Yeah, especially when I'm like, dude, I love you and June. And he's like, oh, yes, that's a lovely movie.
That was a really good impression.
I cannot tackle like doing his impression. So that's the best you'll get out of me. Seeing as I've basically taken over, did you have anything else you wanted to add about the awesome Star Trek? Next Generation?
No, I think you've covered it all, really. You know, brilliant cast, good stories, you know, it's just really well put together. And I think it stands up even today against...
Yeah.
Well, there's not really been as good a lot, and especially as long-running a series ever since, I don't think. I mean, I know there was the spin-offs and of the Star Trek, but yeah. I think that was definitely one of the strongest examples, I think, recently.
And...
for sci-fi, anyway.
Which was your favourite character on The Next Generation?
Well, I think that when I was a child, it was Data. Well, I don't know. I think I'd go back and it'd probably be Captain Picard.
Yeah, I would say it would be Data and Captain Picard for me too.
Yeah.
Definitely. AJ, did you have another one that you wanted to talk about?
I'm trying to think here, because I have two of them. I have another one that sort of like got me interested as in the process of just being the movie fan that I am now. But then there's that, or my all-time favorite sci-fi movie. But I don't know if you wanted to save that for another topic.
It depends. I mean, because the other ones we're gonna go into bad ones, but then we're gonna go into more recent ones. So whichever sort of topic it fits in.
Okay. All right. I'll just go ahead with my top sci-fi movie ever, which again, sorry to be cliche, this is sort of a throwaway answer, but Empire Strikes Back. It's one of my 10 favorite movies of all time. Even though I'm not necessarily a dedicated Star Wars fan, like I like the movies. And that includes, to a degree, the prequels. Like, they are very flawed, yeah. But there's stuff about them that you enjoy. But Empire Strikes Back, I love, mostly for reasons that Dante talked about in Clerks, is that out of all the movies, it had the best story, it took the most chances, and I just love it for the fact that it took Star Wars, which was a really fun movie and a really popular movie, but then it went further with it. It actually deepened the mythology. It gave it this whole sense mm-hmm. of dramatic weight and gravitas. It did. It could have just easily played it safe, just been another adventure movie, but no, it showed that there were stakes going on in this universe, and it got dark, and it wasn't afraid to take characters that you loved and did some pretty terrifying things with them for that time, and it mm-hmm. took itself seriously, but not so much that it didn't allow itself to have fun. Yeah. And just for being that dramatically well-balanced, plus just being a freaking fun in the movie, Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
I agree too.
Yeah. I love that movie so much. I don't really care what anybody has to say about Star Wars as a whole. I mean, that's a great movie.
Yeah, exactly.
It is.
And I think it's important as well because it sort of created the, you know, the first sequel in a trilogy, like it's always been compared to, you know, if there's ever another trilogy and there's a slightly darker second chapter, it's always The Empire Strikes Back of that trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just a good movie. It's sort of created like a type of film in its way.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's just one of the best, like, overall movies out there. And, I mean, I love it. I think AJ just pretty much summed it up perfectly. So, well done, AJ.
Yeah, well done.
awesome, AJ.
I know, I'm the man.
Joe, what other one did you have that sort of got you interested or...
Well, I don't know, am I allowed to be as controversial as to not pick a TV show or a movie?
You can go for it.
Because, as well as being, possibly hand-in-hand with being a sci-fi geek, I am also a big gamer as well. And although I was raised on Star Trek The Next Generation, the first time I really sort of realised that there was other kinds of sci-fi out there
mm-hmm.
was when I bought a game back in the day, like late 90s, I think it was, called StarCraft. I don't know if you've heard of it.
I know of it. I have never played it, but I know of it.
Same here.
Okay, well, it was just a really good example of... It takes a lot of inspiration from a lot of sci-fi, like Aliens, Predator, you know, these really big, iconic films, and it kind of mashes them all together into this new setting. You know, there's the really advanced aliens, and there's the insect-like ones, and then there's the humans thrown in as well. So it was really just, like, although it was essentially what looked like a crap, pixelated mess, really, looking back at it now, I was really into the characters and the story. And then it's sort of like from someone raised from birth on a particular type of science fiction to then get into that, which is just totally different, really gung-ho and action-y. It sort of made me realise that there was actually other types out there. And it was probably around the time I was around the age where I could start watching, you know, Terminator and Aliens, which I was probably a bit too young for when I was on The Next Generation. But yeah, I think that was then sort of a gateway to get into a lot more sci-fi. So that's probably not a popular choice, but that's what personally got me more into science fiction, like more adult science fiction.
Mm. Well, I'm sure there are probably a lot of people that would agree with you, but seeing as I hadn't really played it, so I can't really comment on it. So I'll go with my next choice, and this is going to be very strange. Probably a little bit more out there for sci-fi, but I'm going to say 12 Monkeys because this is one of my favorite movies, and it is about like traveling through time and, you know, the like post-apocalyptic future and, you know, going back in the past and trying to change things. But I think there's just a lot more to it than that. And I can't really explain it well because I think the movie just needs to be experienced, because I also don't really want to give too much away if people haven't actually seen it yet, but it was based upon a short movie called Le Jeté, which I have no pronunciation skills whatsoever.
Le Jeté.
Le Jeté, where it's...
Oui, oui, fromage.
where it's not about that at all. It's kind of like about going back in time and trying to change things in the past to prevent the future, or changing the future to try and make it better. But I think there was so much like deep meaning in 12 Monkeys and so many interesting ideas that this was sort of the movie that really made me notice that there were other kinds of sci-fi out there. And this is the movie that really challenged me to try and comprehend time travel, and I will never forget one day. I'd seen this movie so many times by this day, where I was at home, we're having the family were having a dinner party, and for some reason this movie came up in conversation, and my dad was like, yeah, but how does this work and that work? And he'd seen the movie probably more than I have, and I got out a pen and paper and I sat there for, I don't know, an hour drawing him diagrams of how time travel works. So I think that this is that kind of movie where you really need to think, and I think when something can really challenge you like that, I just really appreciate it. So I definitely have to say that movie. And I don't know what you guys like it, dislike it, or...
No, I've seen it. I've seen it a few times. It's a really, really good film. I know exactly what you mean. So, time travel is the big one in science fiction, isn't it?
It is.
I think there's a few different kinds of time travel, and it depends on which. It doesn't really go out of its way to explain itself in a lot of ways.
No.
It leaves it open to interpretation.
Yeah, it is complicated, but time travel is always perceived differently in different movies.
Yeah.
You know, people comprehend it in a different way. So I think the way they sort of show it in this movie, it's really interesting. And I think when you think about it, you can easily work out how things were supposed to be. I don't think it is that complicated. I just think maybe, you know, when you really think about it, it does make sense. I just think some people...
Yeah.
Don't really pay that much attention. It goes over their head a little bit. What about you, AJ? Do you have any feelings on this movie?
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I love the movie. And I think one of the reasons that it's not really thought of as sci-fi so much is that it creates a really un-sci-fi atmosphere to it.
Yeah.
Because it does deal with, like, in the future and time travel and all that stuff, but... For one, a lot of it is set in, like, the present or, like, in the present in the 90s. But it just has sort of that, sort of this more of a primal atmosphere to it, where everything's kind of dirty and grimy. And it did take itself seriously in the sense that the time travel aspect of it was dealt in a serious manner. And like you said, I don't want to spoil the ultimate direction that the movie goes, but I would say that this movie's attitude towards time travel and the ramifications of time travel, like, aren't too far off from that of Terminator, where it's not necessarily that you can change the future, it's more that it can be delayed, or I would even say 12 Monkeys take a darker direction than that.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's just a fantastic movie. I think it's, you know, I've seen, like, a lot of Terry Gilliam stuff, but I think it's, like, for me, it's, like, one of the best things he's done, without a doubt.
We agree.
Yeah, you agree. So that's 12 Monkeys. So we're going to venture into the not-so-good territory. So we're going to talk about a couple of picks each for, you know, the things in sci-fi that we believe have been bad for the genre and maybe given it a really big step back instead of taking steps forward. So I'll go again. We'll start with AJ. We're going in alphabetical order by first name. So,
all right. After this one, you might not think of me as being so awesome. This is another controversial choice. Although I want to say right off the bat that I don't necessarily hate this specific movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like there are a lot of things about it that I enjoy. Some of the performances were really good, and for the time, the effects were really good, but it's more about the execution of it and sort of what it stands for.
Uh-huh.
And I gotta say, Dune. Oh my God. Yeah.
I completely understand where you're coming from, believe me.
I don't want to say anger towards it, but more of like an agitated confusion towards the whole universe of Dune, sort of is spawned off from how, over the past couple of years, Hollywood has dedicated so many resources and so much time and so much money into getting a new Dune movie off the ground. Having seen the first movie and being familiar with the books and how much mythos is in there and, like, all this terminology, like, why would they want to do that towards something that is going to reach a very specific audience? Like, Dune would never fly in the middle of Wisconsin, aside from, like, the two hermits here who get it. Like, I got 2001 when I was a teenager, and Dune confuses the ever-loving Christ out of me. and I talked earlier about Empire Strikes Back and how it took itself seriously, but it was still fun. It had the perfect balance of both of those elements. Dune just took it way too far. Like, this is to seriousness like Batman and Robin was to camp. Like, with the right amount, it could have worked, but there's just so much going on, but you just can't summon enough gumption to care. Like, all this terminology, like, the Kwisatz Haderach, I don't know, what the fuck is the Kwisatz? I don't know! I didn't care, and it really sucks, because at the same time, I'm admiring the special effects.
Mm.
And, like, Kyle MacLachlan's not bad, and Patrick Stewart was a pimp in there, as per usual.
Oh, yeah.
But that's the downside of a movie taking itself way too seriously, when it should have just allowed itself to be a little more loose, have a little more fun. But maybe that's the downside of trying to pack something so heavy and like a 2-hour package. I haven't seen the Dune miniseries with William Hurt, and maybe that did a better job of sort of getting you into all the alliances and all the stabbings and betrayals and whatnot. But Dune, I just didn't care.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know what you mean. Especially, like, when you think about that, you know, David Lynch, I don't think his heart was really in this movie. So I think that really hurt it as well, where, you know, it really kind of will lose its audience really quickly. Because, you know, his movies are, you know, he's my favorite director and all. But his movies are very strange, obviously. And I think you really need your brain on when you're watching one of his movies. But I think this just kind of is really all over the place. And I do think it is probably the weakest thing that he has done. And I really think that maybe if he actually wanted to really do this movie, it might have turned out differently. And especially when you hear, like, Patrick Stewart really does love this movie. But at the same time, he said, you know, I got cast in this movie simply because he thought I had this look when he came to see me at a play, and I had this long hair and blah, blah, blah. But then when I came on set, I was bald, and he just didn't really like this look at all. And then he just never spoke to him. And it was fascinating to hear him talk about it. But you could, you know, just from him saying these things, like, you could tell that this, you know, he probably really just wasn't, his heart wasn't in it. And I think that definitely overall, just the film suffered because of that.
Yeah, I think sometimes when a film, especially a sci-fi film, which can be very, you know, it's all about inventing political regimes and houses and things which no one's going to have any familiarity with. I think it's a good example of when something's too faithful to the source material. I know fans can get angry with, you know, remakes of films, and it's not true to the original. But I think that the opposite is also a problem, where it's just too dense, and I think that is a good example of that.
Yeah.
I mean, how not to bring sci-fi to a mainstream audience.
Yeah. I think that's probably, I think we said everything we need to say about Dune. what about you, Joe? What do you think has sort of taken a step back for sci-fi?
Well, same, almost exactly what AJ said. It's a controversial choice. I do like the film. I think it's a really good film. But for many reasons, I think that Sunshine in 2007 really set the genre back, because it, you know, it's really well put together. Danny Boyle, great director. It was a great cast. Story was good. It was quite compelling. You know, the effects were really good. It was a good film. But I just remember reading a review of it, and it said that, you know, it was a great film, but it kind of demonstrated that sci-fi had sort of maybe run its course, because it didn't do anything new. It was just those people on a spaceship, and then someone goes insane, and then those people die. And
yeah.
You know, so not to ruin it for anyone, but you know, it was basically just what had been done several times before. And sci-fi is meant to be, you know, the limitless bounds of the universe, and you know, the eternal possibilities of science, and it's meant to be about, you know, the fantastic and the unknown, and it was just samey. And I think that in a lot of ways, you know, even though it was a good film, that was possibly the worst damage you could do, really. It's just,
yeah, I can see the point.
Yeah,
especially because it kind of, like, I mean, while the movie, it's fascinating. I really like watching the movie. I mean, it's visually, it's fantastic. But yeah, it really loses itself with the last, you know, third of the film, and it just changes completely. And then it's no longer about being, you know, about the sci-fi. It changes to, like, a horror film.
Mm.
A bit more unexpectedly, and it kind of loses itself with that, and it just kind of forgets what it was meant to be.
Yeah.
Which I think is like a major problem.
The inferior version of Event Horizon.
It kind of went into Event Horizon. Now, I do like Event Horizon, and I've seen that movie, so I didn't need to see it in Sunshine. I think that's where it kind of really lost itself. I mean, I definitely can see, like, the point that you're making.
Yeah.
Like, it makes perfect sense to me. AJ, do you have any opinions on that?
Like Marcy said, I definitely see where you're coming from on this. It's been a while since I've seen Sunshine. It's been about like 3 years or so now, so I just have some vague recollections of it. But I remember really liking it. But more on the topic of kind of what you said about that article, is that if sci-fi had run its course, I don't know if I would say that sci-fi had so much run its course, because you could say that about any genre when, like, a bad example of that genre comes out, like for kids' movies, Rio, where it was just totally unimaginative and it didn't really do much with it. I wouldn't say that it would run its course, but there are those movies that aren't necessarily inventive, that aren't game changers, but they do what's been done before just really well. And I think the sci-fi genre is pretty adept at doing that, because I remember watching Doug Walker, who does That Guy with the Glasses and The Nostalgia Critic. He was talking about District 9, and he was sort of complaining about how it had this sort of prestige thrust upon it, how it was totally original when there was all these little things that he found about the movie that were borrowed from other things. And my thought was, well, yeah, but it did them really well. Like, District 9, there's as really good as it was sort of a little bit of a Frankenstein monster. It was kind of, like, pulled together from parts of different other sort of sci-fi properties, but it was executed in such a way that I was still interested, regardless of whether or not it had been done before.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah,
I know what you mean, too. But I don't know, I think with the case of this movie, it was more like, you know, instead, like, I think what people were expecting was that it would be different, that it would be something that we hadn't seen, and then in the end it just turned out to be same old, not really giving any new ideas, not, you know, excelling or being particularly bad. It was just there, and then, you know, as I said, it kind of changed.
The worst thing it did was actually be quite good, because it was expected to be, well, a game changer, really. You know,
yeah.
Just because it was such a great director and it looked fantastic.
Mm.
But ultimately, it was just...
It was just there, basically.
Yeah.
Hopefully we can all agree it was still better than Slumdog.
Yes.
Thank you.
I really like that movie, so I'm not really going to say anything.
There's a tense silence.
I can't. I'm not going to comment.
I was thinking the tense silence when I started ragging on Dune, but no, Slumdog is the one that did it.
I really like that movie. What can I say?
Okay.
Although, I like 127 Hours a lot more than Slumdog Millionaire and Sunshine.
Okay, I'm with you there.
Okay, so we'll go to me. I'm going to go with a movie that I fucking hate. I'm just going to come out and say it. I fucking hate it. I think this movie is not only a step backwards for the genre, I think it's a step backwards for humanity. That would be the remake of one of the greatest sci-fi movies ever made, and that's The Day the Earth Stood Still, starring Keanu Reeves. Do I even need to explain myself? This movie is a piece of shit. It has the dumbest ideas. It's as if I went to go take an IQ test and all there was just pictures of toilets and I had to like put shits in the toilets. I mean, that's what it feels like it's reduced my intelligence to.
It has Jaden Smith in it. How could you hate it?
I hate this movie. I mean, if this movie, like, if I had this movie in my possession, I would use it for toilet paper. And even then, that's too good of a treatment for this movie.
If I can interrupt for a second, I know one of the, it's an unwritten rule as a critic that when you're, like, reviewing the remake of something, you try and look at it on its own terms and not compare it to the original. But in this case, it was utterly impossible. Like, everything that the original did right, and the original is a classic. It is one of my favorite movies, period.
Yeah.
And everything it sets out to do, it does perfectly. But the remake, like all the changes that it does, especially with the Keanu Reeves character, the Klaatu character, in the original, one of the aspects of the movie was that he's sort of distrustful about humanity, but over the course of the movie, he grows to realize, okay, there's a lot of good about these people. But Keanu Reeves in the new one, he is a trigger-happy son of a bitch from the get-go. And then like 2 minutes from the end, after he's destroyed most of the city, he's like, oh, yeah, I suppose you're okay.
Yeah.
Like, there's just no transformation there. You feel nothing for this character at all.
Now, when I go to watch a movie, I want to finish the movie. Like, I went and saw this at the theater, and I never walk out of a movie. I was ready to walk out of this after 40 minutes. I could not stand watching this movie and feel like everything was just shitting on me. It was atrocious. Like, its ideas. Oh, my gosh. Like, piss off. Go fucking... Who approves this crap? Honestly, this movie pisses me off. I think it is one of the worst remakes ever. And I think it's just one of the worst movies ever. And I think, like I said, it's not only a step backwards for this genre, it's a step backwards for humanity.
Anything more I can say.
I think I've summed it up perfectly, and AJ summed it up perfectly.
Yeah, your abject hatred for this film. Yes. There's no way I can top that.
So there's that. AJ, your turn once again.
All right. Another movie I hate. I was gonna go for another obvious choice. I was gonna go with Battlefield Earth, but that would have just been too obvious. I think there's enough that's been said about how shitty that movie is.
Indeed.
And pretty much what Marcy said about Day of the Earth Stood Still, you could say about Battlefield Earth. It's popcorn entertainment at its absolute dumbest, bottom of the barrel worst. But I'm going to go with a much more recent example, and one that surprisingly has gotten a good share of decent reviews, but I just really irritated me, and that is Battle Los Angeles. And the way Battle Los Angeles sort of plays out makes you realize how well Cloverfield did sort of the same thing, but just so much better, in that both movies, they set out to put you in the middle of this alien attack. In the first, in Cloverfield's case, it was a giant monster, but it was fucking space, whatever. But not look at it from a distance like so many other alien invasion movies have done, but to just put you in the fray and just sort of capture that tense atmosphere. But Battle Los Angeles, it sort of made me realize why these alien movies sort of like War of the Worlds or Transformers and Independence Day are covered from all these different perspectives, because when you follow just the military guys the whole movie, it gets really fucking boring. Because all of the characters in the movie are just one note stereotypes. There's about like 15 minutes where the most character development you get is, well, this guy lost his platoon, this guy's gonna get married, and this guy's not right in the head, and that's all that you get. And then all of a sudden when the invasion begins, they're all put in the same style of military fatigues, and they go out and they all got guns, they're all screaming, dust is flying everywhere. You can't tell who's who, thus you don't give a shit when so-and-so dies. like, the best way I can put it is that this is a movie where everybody is 2 days away from retirement. Like, that's the level of attachment that this movie has. That, oh no, I wonder if this guy's gonna die. Yeah, he's gonna die. Like, you just don't care, and it's just action, action, action the whole time. But none of it just gets you invested in what's going on. None of it puts you in, like, makes you feel like you're there and makes you sympathize with people. All the stuff is going on around you.
I was sort of indifferent to the movie. It just felt like it was a video game, and I was just sitting in watching somebody play a video game with added in, like, oh, there's these people, and oh, let's just be cliche and have some kind of a little bit of storyline and not really give a shit.
Yeah, the one thing I will say in favor of Battle Los Angeles is that it slightly edges out Skyline, because at least in Battle Los Angeles, you're there alongside the military guys. In Skyline, you're watching people watching the action take place. Like, you're just inside the building the whole time and watching somebody look through a telescope at a fighter jet. You're like, no, I want to be in the fighter jet. Get me out of this goddamn building. But Los Angeles, even, I guess you could say that's even more disappointing, because when you are in the action, you still don't give a shit.
Yeah. I mean, I know what you mean, and I don't know. The other thing that kind of pissed me off about this movie was the science was retarded. And I'm just like, dude, anybody can see how stupid this sounds. And it's like, leave it out if you're just going to insult me, please.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, ugh, yeah. I mean,
It sets out to be the blam-blam explosion escapist thing, and then, oh, no, we're going to slip in a statement here. No. Yeah. Don't try and do this.
Exactly. It's like, gee, because I wish you and my friend, we were like, right, I can see what they're doing here. New.
Yeah, again, I didn't really watch it. It's because I'd seen the trailer for it, and everything you've just said about it, I got from the trailer. It's one of those films where I thought, right, I've seen the trailer, I don't actually need to see the film now, because I've seen everything that it can offer me in that 2 minutes. That's just the impression I got from it. So
yeah,
I just
that's the correct impression.
Yeah,
pretty much.
So I avoided it.
I don't know. For something that was just like, you know, a popcorn movie, it's okay. Like, there's some fun in it, but then there's some really shit things in it as well. So it's kind of meh. You know, the more I think about it, the more I just was kind of indifferent on the film, I guess.
And to add insult to injury, Battle Los Angeles was one of my birthday movies. Like, I went and saw that with some of my friends, and that was going to be, like, hanging out for my birthday. And by the end of the movie, like, I was sunk so low into my seat out of boredom. Like, you would have thought, like, nobody was sitting there. I was just so beaten down. Like, it just dulled me into submission.
Poor AJ.
And I know, I'm a delicate snowflake.
Oh, episode 64, AJ is a delicate snowflake.
If you Photoshop me onto a snowflake, I will murder you.
Don't give me ideas.
you that's shit you reserve for me.
I was going to say, I think photoshopping is reserved for Bead. I'm going to try not to think of a specific Photoshop. Damn you 80s tees and your bad costumes. Anyway, moving on. Joe, do you have what were we talking about? Another bad one?
Bad example? Well, going back to what AJ was saying before, I just hate them. The Star Wars prequels, obvious choice, and everything that needs to be said, I think, has been said 1,000 times before, but I just hate them. It sickens me to think that there are kids out there who's the, you know, because for an entire generation or two of children, Star Wars was almost a magical experience, to drift into cliche territory. really, you know, it affected so many people who went to watch it the first time. The sequels were awesome. It was just fantastic. And then to think that this, a new generation of cinema goers, their exposure to that was the jumped up pile of crap that was The Phantom Menace and its subsequent sequels. It's just, I think, the same way you were saying before, it's a step back from humanity. And I think that I hate them. I could go on, but I might just stop.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, I think everything that needs to be said has been said pretty much, because, I mean, you know, I think that it really is a step backwards, because everything that's just spawned, and now all that Star Wars has been reduced to is just a money grab. That's it. I mean, I love watching the original films, but I want to see the original films the way they were originally. But no, we've got 10 million additions because they've been tweaked in this and that way. And it's like, how much money do I need to pour into your pocket for these movies? Yeah. Like, that's all it is to me now. And it's so hard to love it as much as I used to.
Yeah.
And
It's bad because it precipitated this, like, just binge of CGI in a lot of films afterwards. And I'm not the greatest fan of, I mean, obviously some things you need CGI, but it just excessive use of it just really removes me from the film, and I can't relate to it as much. And I think that, I mean, I think 90% of the films were just CGI'd, and it doesn't date well. If you go and watch them now, it just looks crap.
I mean, I will say this, like, I mean, I know what you mean, but if you have CGI where you can't really notice it too much, I don't think it's too bad. I'm going to use Avatar for an example, because I thought that was done so well that I didn't even realize that these things weren't real. And I think if you can do something like that, that's fine. That doesn't bother me. But I know what you mean about specifically episode one, whereas I just felt like it was so obvious all the way. And they, you know, he really wanted to just sort of shove it down our throats. Yeah, it's CGI. Look what we can do with our technology now, bitch.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
what it was like. So, yeah. I mean, I do agree. I think it is. It has been bad for the genre. AJ, do you have anything to add about Star Wars prequels?
Not terrible much, except for as much as I do like certain aspects of them, I totally get the hate behind them, because they are the more lighthearted. They're definitely more for the kids. Like, the kids just gotta have some good old fun entertainment. But as much as the prequels have gotten the flack that they have, like, none of them compared to the Clone Wars movie. And that was the one that that made me realize, okay, George Lucas really doesn't have his heart in this property anymore. Like you said earlier, like, all the tweakings that he's done, all the re-releases, there comes a point where it stops being, oh, I want to perfect my artistic vision, and bleeds over into, I want your fucking money. And Clone Wars, more than anything, that was the prime example of that.
Yeah. I couldn't even watch 5 minutes of the Clone Wars movie.
It wasn't even well directed. It was just, it's just completely crap.
the saddest part about the Clone Wars movie, I did end up seeing that opening day, middle of the afternoon. There's like maybe 5 other people in the theater, and one of them came in a cape and had a lightsaber. One guy. I feel so sorry for that guy. And at the end, he was still like, yeah, that was awesome. Like, you are sorry. How dare you?
He was a big fanboy, obviously. Yeah, we'll go back to me for the last one. I'm just going to go with something that I think is an example of a really shitty adaptation and just a really shitty movie, and it made sci-fi and space adventure absolutely boring. And I would be going with Lost in Space, the movie. I don't know, it's dumb. It's stupid. I don't like it. Watching it is like, your expectations were kind of awesome, like space adventure, and it's not. It's just dumb, and the characters are dumb. It just made me feel dumb for watching it.
you're right. It's a dumb film.
I mean,
I think as well when it first came out, especially over here, it was really, really heavily marketed. It was the summer blockbuster of the year, and it was brilliant. And there was the toys, and you could get the cereal with the little stickers in it, and then you'd go to see it. It was just crap.
It was like, there was so much excitement to see, and there's so many like possibilities that they could have done with it, but they just went in the dumbest direction, and it's so infuriatingly bad. And it's like, the old TV series was fun. I don't mind watching it, but this just, it just made you not ever want to watch it. And it was just like, hitting head against the wall.
How much dubbing this movie? You said it all. It's just dumb.
Yeah.
And it wasn't an adventure. It was a property. It was something that was just made to sell toys and merchandise. And hopefully distract from your attention that Titanic was still around. So I want to say that was the movie in America that finally unseated Titanic from the number one spot. So it was big and flashy and space and adventure and William Hurt and Matt LeBlanc. And it just amounted to nothing. A couple of really stupid set pieces, some poorly drawn characters you didn't care about, and that was pretty much it.
Yeah, it's just retarded. I don't like using that word, but it was.
Yeah, I mean, there's a difference between fun and dumb, isn't there? I think, I don't know, there must be some cult of producers in Hollywood who seem to think that something needs to be dumbed down to the extreme in order to appeal as a fun movie to a mass audience. And I think that's a good example of that. I mean, recently, Star Trek, the remake of that was, that was really fun. That was an adventure. But it was still, it wasn't dumb. But yeah, Lost in Space was. It was exactly the wrong way to do it.
Yeah, it was stupid. Definitely a step backwards. I mean, this could make you hate sci-fi.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's not the genre that everyone, it's not the first thing you think of. It's traditionally been something only a few people really enjoy. It's like the geeks genre, isn't it? It's bad because if someone was to go and see a film like Lost in Space and they didn't normally like sci-fi,
they would probably never turn them off it forever. Yeah, exactly. They would never want to watch it again. So that probably sums up the bad stuff for sci-fi. So let's go into some things that we think over the last, say, 15 years that have been really awesome examples of sci-fi, if that makes any sense. I think what I mean is stuff that has been different, fresh for the genre over the last, like, say, 15 years. So we'll go with AJ because we're still going in the same order as before.
All right, I had a couple picked out for this category. I'm just going to go right out and just say Inception, but I don't want to go terribly deep into it because, on your podcast, Marcy, I think I've creamed my jeans enough about this movie.
Yes, I think you've had to change your pants many times over Inception.
just for the fact that it presented all its compelling ideas. And in a blockbuster movie package, it was just the perfect balance of things that I look for in a movie. Inception, awesome. But something a little more off the beaten path and something that is strictly sci-fi, I'm going to have to go with Daybreakers, which is definitely more like sci-fi action horror. It's got a little bit of everything. But Daybreakers I really enjoyed because I liked the world that it built up for itself. And there are a lot of movies, like the ones that come to mind are Gamer and Surrogates, where you have these worlds where it's like, okay, everybody lives through robots now. And you're like, okay, what are you going to do with this? We're going to have Bruce Willis running from shit blowing up. And that's all that they do. They don't really support that world. They just boil it down to robots blowing up and shit. But Daybreakers, I just like all the little things that happened in the background that made you realize that the directors really had a dedication to this world. Like, there's this one scene where, like, in the background you see this, like, TV report, and it's talking about how vampires, because the blood shortage is running low, how vampires vampires are out into the forest and feeding off of animals who become vampires and then, like, wander into woods and then daylight burst into flames and have all these forest fires. Like, it's filled with all those little details like that that make it so cool to watch. Like, on the one hand, yeah, you got Willem Dafoe and Ethan Hawke, like, busting heads and vampires exploding and all this blood and action. But it, I just liked its world and how it just didn't treat it as an idea for the basis of just a couple of action sequences.
I love Daybreakers. I agree with you. I just think it's such a fantastic film. I mean, I don't think I can really add anything to what you've said because it's awesome. I really love it. I'm really glad to hear that you like it as well.
Yeah, it was a really cool movie. It is a fun movie, and it isn't something that is really serious. All those little attention to detail, all those little things, it lets you know that they care.
Yeah, I'm there with you 100%. I was really surprised by this film, and I definitely need to revisit it. I haven't seen it since the theater, but it's definitely stuck with me since I saw it. So.
Well, I need to visit it because, yeah, again, it's another one that I never got to see. I was really disappointed because, unlike Battle Los Angeles, this was one that I really wanted to get to the cinema and see. You know, just for various reasons, it never happened. So it's definitely on my list.
Yeah, check it, definitely.
Because I love vampire stuff, so I was really disappointed that I didn't get to see it.
Yeah, I mean, it does definitely. You know, help that genre as well. Like, it's fresh for vampires, which has been done to death right now.
Yeah, especially recently, yeah.
Yeah, so it is it's worth checking out. So what was your, one of your picks for the subject at hand?
Okay, Moon, I thought was really, really good. It's for the exact opposite reason, I picked Sunshine for my bad edition. Moon was just, it was intelligent, it was understated, it did a lot of new things. It took stereotypes and preconceptions for sci-fi and it turned a lot of them on the head. It really did something new and different, and it did it with Sam Rockwell and Kevin Spacey's voice and one set, which was incredible, really, because as well, like, sci-fi tends to be quite extravagant, and there's those special effects and, you know, stuff blowing up all the time, and there's aliens and cool makeup and stuff like that, but Moon was none of that, but it was still a brilliant, brilliant film, and I recommend anyone goes to see it.
Yeah, that was actually going to be my pick as well.
Oh, sorry.
you're like a man after my own heart right now.
Ruined everything.
Oh, it's
hey, on the flip side, at least we all agree Moon is freaking awesome.
Moon is one of my all-time favorite movies. I put it as the top movie for that year. I have talked about it so much, so that of course is going to be one of my picks. So I'm glad that, you know, at least somebody else thinks of it as highly as I do, and obviously we all do, so it's okay that you picked it as well. There isn't really much for me to say about it, though. It is an amazing film. It's an amazing piece of sci-fi. It shows you what you can do with a little budget and a lot of imagination. And Sam Rockwell is flawless in this movie. Oh, my gosh. So amazing. And I think the ideas that it had are just so, like, they're just really... I can't even express myself. You know, the film is just so smart. I loved it. And I think if like me, you love this movie, definitely watch it with the commentary because it really adds some really good insight into the film. I think, you know, this movie almost restores my faith in the genre when I see something as retarded as The Day the Earth Stood Still. Moon just makes everything better.
Yeah.
Definitely. So, yeah, good pick, obviously.
Well, thank you. Good for you too.
Yes. So, AJ, we're back to you again.
Okay. Actually, now that I think about it, we have been talking about all these movies that sort of bucked what people think of sci-fi. I just remembered one that is you could technically call it a sci-fi movie. It's, I wouldn't say it belongs to any genre. It is totally its own movie, but it's called The American Astronaut, and it's just sort of imagine a sci-fi movie crossed with a German expressionism film crossed with an alt-rock concert.
Wow.
Because it's a musical about an astronaut who's hired to just courier stuff all over the galaxy, and he is hired to pick up the boy who has actually touched a woman's breast. That's his character's name. And,
You sold me.
And take him to this planet full of women who need to be their king and help, like, populate their people. But all the meanwhile, there's this professor, there's this guy who's chasing the astronaut who wants to kill him, but he has to apologize to him first because he can't kill anybody that he has a grudge with. And in the meantime, you get all these really bizarre musical numbers, especially where the astronaut makes it to the planet of the women, and he has the song called The Girl with the Vagina Made of Glass.
I want this movie.
It is unlike any movie you've ever seen, and there's a good chance you will hate this movie just because it just goes off on its own tangent so much. It's nobody's boss. It runs the show. But if you're willing to just kind of see what it has to offer and appreciate the whole weirdness of it, it's worth a look. The American Astronaut.
Wow.
Yeah, I've never heard of that before in my entire life, but it sounds amazing.
It's incredible. It's an experience.
Wow, I'm sold. I am, like, going to try and find this movie right now.
do it. It's so cool.
Awesome. The American Astronaut.
One of my favorite scenes is, like, where the astronaut stops in this bar, and these two thugs come in to threaten him in the bathroom, and they just, like, set up a gramophone and just sing, take his picture, and then leave.
Wow.
That's the scene, but it's a really cool scene, but it makes no sense.
Awesome. I didn't even know what to say. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
Like,
Joe.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Sounds interesting. Yeah, Joe, what about you?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I just don't know if my pick is ever going to be able to top that.
Nothing ever will now.
No, should we just stop now?
Well, apparently, according to IMDb, it says recommendations. Like, I looked up this movie and it says recommendations, Moon.
Really?
it's the signs, Marcy.
Yeah. Well, apparently it's available in Australia, so there we go. I have to find it.
Yeah, I'll have to find it over here as well.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Okay. Well, like I said, I don't think it's not going to top that by any stretch of the imagination. But my other pick is Serenity,
which is
obviously the movie follow on from the short lived TV show Firefly, mm-hmm. which I don't think it's not a very good film in the sense that it needed to do a lot to please a lot of different people. It needs to be mainstream and it needs to appeal to the fans of the show. So there was only so much of either it could do. But as a fan of the show and a lover of mainstream film, it was just, in a lot of ways, it was the perfect sci-fi film. You know, it was a lot of fun, but there was a really serious edge to it. There was plot twists and turns. There was a cool hovercraft chase sequence. It was like they just went through a checklist of, all right, what do we need in a perfect sci-fi film? Just go through the list. It was just brilliant. And it was really good as well because it demonstrated that although Fox made the eternally bad decision to cancel Firefly after only a few episodes, it showed that the fans, if enough people like something, then he's doing something else because it was commissioned entirely off the basis of DVD sales for the show. So it shows that that there is some power in the fans' hands. Not necessarily a lot, but it is there.
Yeah, I think one of the, I think what sort of set it aside as something really different is that it's like a Western in space.
Mm.
And that's what I really found fun. Was that it took that sort of concept and put it there.
Yeah, because it kind of makes a lot of sense if you think about it. Like it's the space would be the new frontier, like the old West was. And
exactly.
Somehow, no one has had this idea before, but it just works really well. I think it was too out there for a mainstream audience. I think from what we were talking about before, sci-fi suffers from this unfamiliarity a lot of people have, and it was quite dense. You know, they did another thing where they blended American and Chinese cultures, and there were people swearing in Chinese, and you know, there was lots of stuff that a mainstream audience probably wouldn't take to very well. But it was brilliant. I mean, I just love Joss Whedon. I used to be a big fan of Buffy and Angel, and it was just a real shame when it was cancelled. But like I said, this film was released, so it kind of made up for it. Gave the show a finish, which I think is what makes it so good. If you watch the show, then it kind of just stops, whereas the film, it gives some resolution to the characters and stuff, so that's why I love it. Well, I don't know about you two.
AJ, do you have any thoughts about it?
It was a good movie. I had a lot of fun with it, and the thing that I kind of appreciate about it most, though, is that I'm not a big a lot of TV, and so I didn't get to see Firefly, but I watched Serenity knowing very little about the show, and I was still into it. I did not feel lost at all. I felt that rapport between the characters. I knew the sort of the tone the story was going for, the universe that it was set in, and it just did all that really effortlessly and just showed me a good time.
Agree. Definitely. You've summed it up. I mean, you both summed it up pretty well. So, and then back to me. I was going to go with the Battlestar Galactica series, the remake series.
Yeah, brilliant.
It is. I was sort of late to the bandwagon on the show. Like, I only, like, watched it last year, and I watched the whole thing in just a couple of months, I think. And I just, it really was something fantastic and fresh and different for, like, sci-fi and TV. And it had so many great ideas, and it blended, like, the, you know, being in space, sci-fi, but then there was the whole religious element that was so fascinating, and there was so much mystery, and it had some great characters. It was just an overall, it's a fantastic experience, and I still think about the show. Like, I'm almost tempted to go and watch it again.
Yeah, same.
It's so great.
I think it got a lot of critical acclaim as well because of how it was
different.
I mean, because sci-fi historically has been quite a good channel for political allegory, you know, making a few political statements that you wouldn't ordinarily be able to accept through these new things, and it was very good for that. It did a lot of commentary on the War of Terror, as well as the religious, like you mentioned. So yeah, I love it. I think it's one of the, it's probably one of my best, my favourite TV shows of all time.
Yeah, it's definitely one of my favourites of all time as well. And in a way, I was sorry that I was so late to seeing it, but in the end, I'm glad that I did get to see it. And I'm almost very glad that I remained mostly spoiler-free as well.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on. And the characters as well, they're just so fascinating. And the ideas that they had, and it just all sort of came together really well. And if you haven't seen it, or you're not really that into TV series, I think that you would definitely get a lot out of the Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, because it's got a really good production value. The cast is amazing. It looks really good as well. It kind of pioneered that, you know, it was sci-fi and they were in space, but they were still using a little map with little plastic models on to represent a battlefield. And it was very low tech in that way. So I think it was good for you know, the design of sci-fi.
Mm.
Kind of like Moon has sort of followed in its footsteps, where just because it's sci-fi, it doesn't have to be flashing as a gizmo.
Exactly, yeah. It's very dark. The series is pretty, you know, it is, like I said, it is dark. Like, It's not very lighthearted at all. It is very serious. I don't know if there's much else I can really say about Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, other than go and watch it.
Yes, watch it now. So we'll wrap it up with, I guess we can, if you want to have any honorable mentions for like good or bad sci-fi, or if there's anything that you could say, you know, if you're not really into sci-fi, maybe you should check this out or avoid this. Now would be the time to say it. So we'll go back to AJ if he has any closing thoughts on the subject.
All right, I have two I want to leave the listeners with. One is one of the more underrated family movies of the past few years that actually had a sci-fi angle to it, and that's Zathura, which is based on the book that was from the same author as Jumanji, and it sort of is the space version of Jumanji, but Jumanji is a movie that I could never really get into. I had a little bit of fun with it, but I just think it was a little too heavy. But Zathura just found the exact tone. It's a very retro-looking movie. It uses practical effects and models as much as possible. And it's a really fun movie. And for my second one, I'm going to go against the grain here. I am going to actually recommend a book. I'm going to recommend that you read something out there. I know it's a really weird concept these days. But and it's a book called Bimbos of the Death Sun. By Sharon McCrum, and it's a murder mystery set at a fantasy sci-fi convention, and it's a really cool read, especially since it was written, I believe, in the mid-80s or later 80s, so a lot of the elements that, like, fit into how this author tries to solve this murder there, and within the 80s, knowing what we know now, is in itself is a delight to read, but it's a really cool different sort of murder mystery.
Nice. I love that title.
Yeah, the title.
It sounds fascinating, to be honest.
AJ, I have to come to you for recommendations more often. that film sounds...
Awesome. Joe, do you have any closing mentions?
I feel that as the resident Brit, I have to try and spread the word for British sci-fi. So I won't be as obvious as to recommend Doctor Who, but I will recommend the spin-off to Doctor Who, Torchwood, particularly the third series of it, which is called Torchwood Children of Earth. I don't know how much international exposure it's had, but after the first two series were really ropey, you know, it's very hit and miss. I think it was continued purely off the back of the success of Doctor Who. But Children of Earth really blew me away. I don't know whether it was because I didn't expect much from it because of the first two series, but it was just really dark. It was very British, which was quite nice because we don't get too many really British shows over here. That it just seems to be a lot of American importations. It's only a little mini series. It's 5 episodes long. It's almost like 24 in a way as well, because each episode is about one day. And it was originally broadcast Monday to Friday. It's dark. It's funny in places. It's got a few decent action scenes in. And if you're just looking for a bit of televisual entertainment, then it's a good watch.
I haven't really gotten into Torchwood. I've been interested in seeing it, but again, I haven't like really been into Doctor Who. And I used to watch it like the old series. And I hadn't really gotten into the new one, but I've sort of been umming and ahhing as to whether I should start watching it. But I have so much other stuff to watch, so I don't know.
Well, that way then Torchwood might be the best way forward. Torchwood Children of Earth, 5 episodes, and you're done.
All right. Maybe I'll check that out. Is there anything else that you had?
No, not really. I didn't want to go on too much.
Okay. All right. For me... I guess, I mean, people probably have seen these anyway, but some sci-fi that I really like, some older ones, I definitely have to go with Tron, because I love the original Tron. It is a really fun movie. It had some unbelievably awesome ideas that were so ahead of its time, and I think a lot of that, like, when you think about it, they kind of predicted in a way where things were going to go with technology. And it's really interesting just to go back and watch that and even see the birth of, you know, CGI. And I will say I recommend Tron Legacy, but I love that movie. I don't care what anybody says about it. I guess fun action adventure movies, you can definitely go with, like, Back to the Future series, because that's, yeah, like, sci-fi action adventure awesomeness.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love Back to the Future.
Yeah, it is. I've watched the first two movies recently, and it's so much fun.
Yeah.
Such great ideas, like, oh, so good.
The second one particularly, because I think it's, I mean, I can't think of another one, but it's unique in the sense that it's a sequel that physically goes back into the first film.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of another example of when that's actually happened.
It just has
so much fun with it. Like, it's just...
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, classics.
It is awesome. I would definitely recommend some Star Trek films. Like, my favourite is Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, which is amazing. And, of course, the recent Star Trek movie is awesome as well.
First Contact's really good as well.
First Contact rocks, man.
Yeah.
It rocks hard. You can see Patrick Stewart at his best.
Yeah.
The line is drawn here.
What, no love for Nemesis?
For who?
For Nemesis?
Not really. I mean...
Not as much as First Contact.
Tom Hardy is pretty rockin', but I don't know. That movie tried too hard, I think.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, because I think they knew it was going to be the last one, so they thought... They tried too hard. So
they tried to rough Khan it too much, I think.
Yeah.
I will definitely give props to, say, like, The Matrix for what it did back in the day, because that really sort of did breathe fresh air into the genre. It definitely went into this different direction. It was a game changer for the time. And I know that it kind of got its ideas from other sources, but it really just kind of threw it into the mainstream. And I would definitely recommend The Thing as being, like, a sci-fi horror that is awesome. Yeah. And I guess more recently, I know that some people don't like this movie, but I would say District 9, because I really think that did such a great job of doing something completely different. Like, I think it is different, and the way they went with it was so good. So I guess that's sort of like a baseline where you can, some recommendations anyway. Blah. Have I said enough right now? What's going on and on. yeah, so I guess that's a wrap from all of us and the podcast. So we will let our listeners know where they can find us, and now would be the time where you can promote yourself a little bit and tell the audience a little about yourself. Since the audience probably knows a lot about me, I'll just give the details of where you can find me. So we're at supermarcy.com, so it's super and then Marcy, as well as on the Twitter account. You can look up Super Podcast on Facebook, and you can pretty much just look up Super Marcy or Marcy and you'll find something out about me. And if you want to email, it's marcy@supermarcy.com. So AJ, your turn.
Alrighty, if you want to get a hold of me, yell at me, tell me how much of an idiot I am for my opinions. You can find me on Facebook, AJ Hockery. Just type it in there. I'm probably the only one. On Twitter, my account is twitter.com/madmovieman. And if you want to email me, ajhockery@hotmail.com.
Thank you, AJ. Joe, would you like to do
self-promotion? Representing Tin Goods, our website, it's a pop culture reviews website based in Liverpool. If you want to find us, we're at tingoods.com. If you want to get in touch with us on Twitter, we're at tinned_goods. And myself personally, I'm on Twitter, JA_MCG, and Joe@tingoods.com. So drop me a line.
Yeah, send a hate mail to AJ. No, I'm just kidding. I want to thank you both for joining me for the show and for participating and all of that. So until next time, I have been super. AJ has apparently been awesome, and I think Joe has been British.
Glad to hear.
So with that said, yeah, catch you later.